Hello?
Hi, James.
Hi, Heather.
How you doing?
Good, good. All ready for you now, so...
Excellent. So if I sneeze in the middle of the interview, I apologize. I have a cold.
If you sneeze, do you get to edit that out afterwards, or are they included?
I'll edit it, I promise.
Okay, well, I'm more concerned if I start choking or sneezing, too, that you might do a little edit there, too, would be appreciated.
Sure. Do you have a cold, too?
No, but just, I guess that's my main concern, is that I'm going to do some bodily function that doesn't fit here on on the airwaves.
Yes. No, this is going to tape. It can be edited.
Great.
Okay. So, first of all, I have to compliment you on your pamphlet. It's extremely well written.
Thank you, although I can't take credit for actually writing it.
Yeah, it's from San Francisco, right?
Right, and the author of this pamphlet is a fellow named Tim Hammond, who... is basically the first impetus into this group No Harm.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, it's really good. It was easy to pull points out of. So
oh,
I thought.
Great.
Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe to start with, it would be good to just go over some of the reasons given why circumcision is performed in North America, and let you respond to them.
Okay. Sure.
So first of all, I mean, the big one is everybody just says it's more hygienic.
Right. People say that without doing too much thinking. It seems that, most of the body requires some kind of personal hygiene, you know, basically washing. And human beings are very intelligent creatures, and I think that... each one of us has the ability to wash the most sensitive part of our body. We certainly are trusted with washing our ears, our feet, brushing our teeth, and I think we should be suspicious of any sort of a ritual which is going to relieve us of sensitive tissue over genitals when the excuse given for that is that it's perhaps going to be difficult for us to wash them. So I don't think the argument for hygiene really stands up if one starts to think about it.
Mm-hmm. But they say it reduces your chances of getting urinary tract infection or penile cancer.
Right. Again, this is kind of a strange background that circumcision has here in North America. As a medical surgery, it's constantly looking for a reason to exist. If in fact those things were true, it would be, first of all, the first organ and the only organ of the body that is prone to cancer just by existing, or prone to causing cancer just by existing. And if we were going to use that kind of logic, we would perhaps attack other areas of the body too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at birth, with, you know, but we're coming away as a society, I think, from that kind of medical intrusiveness. Certainly tonsillectomy and appendectomy have changed quite a bit in the last 20 years. You know, where we used to routinely remove organs, we don't anymore.
Mm-hmm. And in your pamphlet, too, you also mentioned removing breasts as a prevention of breast cancer.
It would be ridiculous.
Exactly. Now, what about Jewish tradition? Because this is where originally this all started from. And, you know, a lot of people would say, like, hygiene aside, this is, you know, a Jewish tradition.
Well, an interesting note about circumcision in regards to Jewish tradition is that originally, first of all, Jews did not originate circumcision. Although it's certainly been practiced by them perhaps longer than any other group that, you know, currently is practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as an interesting historical note, original Jewish circumcision only removed the tip of the foreskin and was a much less radical form of circumcision than what we see practiced today, both by Jewish people and by the medical profession. Sometime during the Hellenic period of Greece, when Jewish youths were competing in the Greek games, it was considered a very vulgar thing to expose your glands. Even though the games were performed in the nude, it was considered very rude to have the foreskin retracted. So Jewish youths began pulling their foreskins forward and tying them in that position in order to cover the glands and compete in the games without being rude. And as a result, they encouraged their foreskins to grow in much the same way that we restore our foreskins nowadays by pulling the skin forward and taping it in that position. These young men found that they were in fact encouraging the growth of their foreskin again.
Mm-hmm.
So rabbis at the time began a more radical circumcision to keep people from restoring their foreskins. And that is something that has persisted to this day.
A lot of people would say, like, it's not really as useful as people would suggest that it is. But then again, I mean, you know, what difference does it make? I mean, even if it only is mildly helpful, I mean, what good is a foreskin anyway? I mean, it's not like you're removing an arm or a leg.
Right. Basically, what it is removing is something perhaps similar to an eyelid, in that it is a very sensitive, a protective skin which covers the glands of the penis and basically keeps it sensitive for life. It also provides a sheath for the penis to move within, which is a very sensual and erotic feeling for an intact man. So basically the purpose of the foreskin is one of protection and sensitivity and sensuality.
Mm-hmm. But does it make a big difference? I mean, everybody says, people say, you know, well, if you're intact, sex is way more pleasurable. But obviously, if you're a circumcised male, you would not have anything to compare this with.
Exactly. The only people who can really speak with much knowledge on this subject are those who have experienced it both ways. And certainly there are a number of men in our society who have been circumcised as adults and can, you know, express themselves as to what their experience was like before and after. Amongst those men are a number who were pressured into circumcision by a society which has a lot of circumcised males, and so perhaps with poor self-esteem or a poor body image, they were kind of coerced into circumcision. And often these men say things like the difference is quite dramatic, and that the sensitivity is diminished, that the feeling is, if you wanted to equate it with sight, is like being colorblind. I can't imagine why anyone who's tuned into the sensuality of their own body would care to diminish that even by the smallest amount. And perhaps one of the things most interesting about circumcision is that In the long history of circumcision, it's rarely something that is requested by the individual. It's usually something that is imposed on children or teenagers or slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the point that I take with circumcision, is that this is a human rights issue of who owns this body.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into other areas of thinking as to do we value children as possessions, or do we value them as individuals?
Yeah, because a lot of people say, you know, if you're performing this as soon as the child is born or within a few days of its birth, you know, is this even going to be in its memory? Is it, you know, is it a big deal? Doesn't it just go away?
Hmm. Have you had the opportunity perhaps to see a circumcision performed?
I haven't, no.
No. It is something that I was not prepared for, even though I had done a lot of reading on the subject. And when I saw a videotape of a baby boy being circumcised, I could only think that this has got to be the most intense pain that this person perhaps will ever feel in their entire life. Now, whether that's a conscious memory 10 or 20 or 40 years later, or whether it's a subconscious memory, it obviously has done something to that person's perception. It imparts into the brain intense pain, in a place that should be reserved for sexual pleasure. It's a rather disturbing thought that, you know, we would take a perfectly formed human being, and at birth is perhaps one of the times when the foreskin is most useful, because it protects the glans penis from the urine and feces in the diaper.
Mm-hmm.
And when you remove that from a baby, the foreskin naturally adheres to the head of the penis. So it's not just the cutting away of the foreskin, but it's first of all the ripping away of the foreskin from the glands. And to see a circumcision performed, there's no question that this is extremely painful for the person that it's being done to.
Now, another thing that that is in this pamphlet that No Harm's put out is you compare male circumcision to female circumcision in a lot of ways, and a lot of people would go like, I don't know, you know, that's pretty severe. But how do they relate to one another? How do you see them as being similar?
Well, they both originate in societies which are male-dominated. Both of them are very sexually oppressive acts towards children, and they impart messages of ownership towards children. Obviously, female circumcision, which involves cutting away of far more tissue, is intensely brutal. If we look at the structure of the genitals, of course, both male and female are identical up to 6 weeks in utero, and after that point, the organs develop in different directions. So the glands of the penis becomes the clitoris in a woman, or I should say that the tissue that becomes the clitoris in a woman becomes the glands penis of a man. So female circumcision, which often involves cutting away the entire clitoris and even more so cutting away the labia and stitching it together, is equivalent to cutting off a man's penis. You know, there are certainly physical differences between male and female circumcision, but the places where we see the similarities are amongst the adults who nervously insist upon circumcision for either their female children or their male children. It seems to be that the same logic is in place to support both.
So why do you think in American society, we look at African cultures which circumcise their female children, and we think, you know, God, that's brutal, that's terrible, that's horrible. And yet here, we look at the circumcision of males, and we think it's fairly routine, and even, you know, I'd say the majority of men themselves in North America are fairly indifferent towards the fact that they've been circumcised as children. I mean, why do you think we're so blasé about the whole thing?
That's an interesting question, and it points out, again, the similarities between these two practices of male and female circumcision. In Africa, the women look with indifference towards the fact that they themselves are circumcised and that they now are perpetuating this abuse on their own children. I couldn't really get a grip on male circumcision until I read a most incredible book by an author named Hanny Lightfoot Klein, and her book is Prisoners of Ritual. And she's traveled through Africa for 7 years backpacking and writing about this topic of female circumcision. And as a Jewish woman, she had experienced her own son's circumcision, or, you know, she had been present at it as most Jewish mothers are, and her detailing and writing about the societies that support female circumcision showed how very similar their attitudes are, as ours are in North America, towards male circumcision.
And in what particular ways?
Well, okay, in the fact that most circumcised people are blasé about the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you ask any person who's circumcised their feelings on the subject, you find pretty quickly that the subject gets changed or they're very matter-of-fact about it. It seems that those of us who are vocal in being against it are a minority at this point. And this is so in America with men, and this is so in Africa with women. 100 million women currently walking on this planet have experienced some form of female circumcision, and yet only a very, very, very small percentage of them are able to be vocal about it and speak out against it. And you see the same thing in America with the men, even though right now this is the largest population of circumcised males ever to inhabit the planet. Really, only a handful of us speak out against it.
Why do you think a lot of men don't? Do you think that they don't think about it, or do you think that a lot of men are resentful of it and just don't want to talk about it? Or
that's a good question too. I think a very large percentage of men are not have truly never really thought enough about it or gotten enough in touch with their own feelings about it, because it is such an abusive experience, that such a painful experience, that it is filed away or banished from conscious thinking. And in addition, it's done at birth, so as you said earlier, there's really not a point of comparison.
But I mean, surely, because you mentioned in this pamphlet, not you personally, but they talk about a lot of the problems that can arise from, like, botched circumcisions.
Yes.
Actually, what exactly are, maybe you could elaborate on that for a minute, what exactly are, like, the skin tags and scars and things like that? What are some of the problems that arise?
Well, probably the most common problem resulting from circumcision is the removal of too much skin. You know, when we look at a baby, everything about them is very tiny, and of course their foreskins are just very, very small. On a grown man, this represents, on an intact man, the foreskin represents about one-third of his penile shaft skin.
Wow.
So to remove about a third of his skin, you know, is quite a fair amount, and when you consider the function of that skin, as it protects, as it stimulates, etc., it is distressing to think about removing it. But as I said earlier, not always is the skill of the person performing the circumcision all that great. In fact, in North America, very often the job of circumcision is kind of pushed on to an intern or someone who's lower on the medical totem pole, because it is such a very disturbing surgery to witness and to perform. It can be quite stressful to the person performing it. And as a result, baby is screaming and trying to kick and move away, but of course he can't because he's restrained in a device called a circumstraint.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to get back to your question as to what are some of these problems, well, the tools used in circumcision can be misapplied. Skin can be caught in them in the wrong way, resulting in tags of skin that, I suppose, should have been cut off during circumcision if what they're trying to get is a total amputation of the foreskin. So these tags of skin are left, and they can be extremely unattractive on a grown person and contribute very much to a poor self-image. And of course, there can be, and there always is scarring, but in some cases, the scarring can be extremely visible, and in some cases when so much skin is removed, the result is that sex for these men becomes quite painful, because the normal skin that would be there, that would move in a certain way, is gone, and so when the skin is too tight, of course it becomes chafed during sex, and sex is not as pleasurable for these men.
Mm-hmm. So, surely there's probably a lot of men out there. I mean, do you know approximately what percentage of men may have had, like, botched circumcisions? Or
it's hard to say, because most of this doesn't get reported, or if it does, very often it's treated by the medical profession as unimportant. Tim Hammond, the fellow I mentioned earlier who put out this pamphlet that you were referring to, is responsible for doing a survey of men, which he calls the Harm Documentation Survey. And to date, he's had about 350 men respond to a questionnaire which asks questions about their circumcisions and how they perceive themselves as being harmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very small percentage of children and of people who have been so badly damaged by circumcision at birth that the penis was entirely destroyed. And these people have, and their parents have to then face questions regarding a total surgical reconstruction of the penis, which of course is not usually much more than a cosmetic, or sex reassignment, and all the trauma that's involved in that to the individual and the family. And in fact, there are probably 15 or 20 young women in the United States who either are or are not aware of the fact that they were born male and damaged so badly that they were reassigned as female.
Hmm. That's fascinating.
It's disturbing, and it would be very fascinating if some of these adult people would come forward with their stories. But of course, the shame that surrounds them is incredibly intense.
Mm-hmm. Well, because like I say, there's probably a lot of people out there who do have poor self-image or some sort of side effect from circumcision that is not discussed.
Absolutely.
So I guess the question is, for these people, can it be surgically fixed?
Yes, and it can also be fixed non-surgically.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 10 or 15 years, a number of us have been restoring our foreskins with non-surgical techniques, basically stretching the skin and encouraging its growth.
Mm-hmm.
And the results from this can be quite incredible.
Really?
Yes.
How do you do it?
Basically with a type of tape that's available from the drugstore for bandages.
Is that the white stuff?
Like a medical white paper tape, yes.
Okay.
And some weighted devices that fit over the glands and allow you to tape the skin forward. And the weight, which varies from about 8 ounces up to about 22 ounces, causes the skin to be put in tension for all the time that it's worn. And it not only stretches the skin, but creates the growth of new skin.
Hmm. Now, how long does it take to, can you restore an entire foreskin that way?
Yes, and it takes anywhere from 2 to 5 years, depending on the amount of damage that was done by circumcision to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If you were here, I would show you pictures, and then you would be suitably amazed on the air, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that this works, but I can tell you from personal experience of a year and a half of restoring that it is probably the most constructive thing that I have done for myself physically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally amazing. The results have so far fooled a couple of people. One of whom was a doctor, so.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that just goes to show.
Well, it goes to show that anything's possible, and what you thought was not is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty amazing.
Excellent. So now, for people who want to learn more about this, or for people who are interested in either repairing damage done to them or restoration, is there a number to call for more information? Are there, you know, doctors in town who specialize in this?
No. The best source for information at this point is a book called The Joy of Uncircumcising by Jim Bigelow. And it's available here in Vancouver at Little Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps at other bookstores as well. It will give anyone who's interested the details of how to restore their foreskin through non-surgical and surgical methods. It also is a real enlightening guide to raising consciousness on this issue. There are a number of books on the subject. There's one called Circumcision, What It Does by Billy Ray Boyd. Another, Say No to Circumcision by Thomas Ritter. And as I mentioned earlier, an excellent book by Henny Lightfoot Klein called Prisoners of Ritual, An Odyssey into Female Genital Mutilation. And I would encourage anyone who's even the slightest bit curious on the subject to get to the library or get to a bookstore and read one or all of these books, because it really it will fire you to help to do something about this, because this is an issue of human rights, it's an issue of children's rights, and it's an issue of sexual liberation. Circumcision is a sexually oppressive act, and I feel very strongly that if we're to advance as people, we have to do away with certainly infant and children's circumcision and get to the point where people are able to make choices concerning their own bodies.